You can get in it too.
Hi, everybody. Thank you for coming to this edition of BIAC. We have a short agenda today. You'll note that the secretary is not here. He was double booked today, and I'm sure he's listening to us. So we'll all need to be on our best behavior, or at least I do. The agenda items for today are that Jennifer Morrell has offered to come to from Arapahoe County to give us her assessment of throughput, the sort of some throughput information that she has collected from this last election. And then we were going to go over, give you a short synopsis of our legislative agenda and what's happening in the legislature on some bills that we're following, and also that are what we consider to be our bills. So that summary Ben will give us after we hear from Jennifer. I would just note the obvious, which is that there have been some discussions outside of BIAC on some of the issues that we've been talking about, and those are still ongoing. And for that reason, we probably won't go into any detail about that today, although obviously if you want to talk about it, feel free, any of the topics that we've talked about up to now or any of the possible policy alternatives, we can definitely bring those up. But I thought we'd probably use our time more efficiently to hear from Jennifer about her project and the data that she's collected. So I will hand it over to her and anybody associated with her that might be helping her.
So before I start, is this good? Am I good? I think it's really important to note that election management is not an exact science, as much as we would like it to be. And I actually tried to make a little bit of an extra effort over the last week to reach out to some colleagues in some bigger jurisdictions to see if they had any sort of tool similar to what we're going to talk about today. I reached out to some academic professors who really are leaders in election, looking at elections, measuring elections, evaluating elections to see if they had some recommendations. I really was hoping for some sort of magic formula. And there just isn't one. And so the question is, can we reasonably come up with, I got to move this because it's driving me nuts. Can we reasonably come up with some sort of tool to make a determination on either a minimum threshold for web score check-in stations or perhaps a range that could be applied fairly to all of the counties in planning for an election? And so what I'm going to show you is not perfect, but I think it's a good starting place where we might be able to generate some ideas or at least say, is this reasonable to kind of take the next step and work with the Secretary of State's office to come up with a tool, or is this something that might be better left for now as a best practice until it can be perfected a little bit and then maybe looked at putting into rule or statute? So first of all, what I'm going to show you, the data subcommittee has done a great job pulling a lot of data together. And most of the credit really needs to go to Amber and her team because they've done a tremendous job in the state working with Secretary of State's office to pull all of this great data that we have in SCORE. And so we were able to go through and look hour by hour for each county, and I'm not going to spend time going through this, but know that this is the source for these throughput tools that I'm going to show you, came from these hourly breakdowns of each county's in-person voting, both for early voting and on election day. So my first stab at this was thinking, is there a way we could do this simply? If we're going to put it into rule or statute, it needs to be a simple formula that is easy to explain and easy to reproduce. So we looked at just taking the in-person turnout from a similar or like election, adding in a field or a factor for population increase, and then coming up with anticipated maximum daily number of voters, and then a couple of variables: how many hours will the polls be open, how many minutes does it take to complete one transaction, and this is an area for some conversation. If we were to have such a tool, is this something you would let each county determine on their own, or would the Secretary of State's office decide on sort of this transaction time? We did a few different timings in Arapahoe County, and it was depending on the type of transaction, whether it was a new voter registration or just an address update or just a simple, you're in the system, here's your voter access card. 5 to 6 minutes, approximately. The range was actually more like 3 to 7. So I think 5 minutes for this demonstration purposes is probably a good average. Then I looked at the voter volume. So back to that data slide I just showed you a minute ago, spreadsheet. Both the minimum and then at the peak, how many voters were they seeing in an hour, and came up with this sort of median volume, put in a peak multiplier, and then made some recommendations on the median web score stations needed as well as the peak web score stations needed. And you'll see over here, we did do a survey where we asked counties to self-report how many web score stations. I know the last meeting, Judd, or was it the meeting before, you had handed out a sheet that had web score users. And what we found as I was going through this is that web score users didn't necessarily translate into stations. And so this should be, I think, is a fairly accurate number. I sent this out to all of the ESRC data subcommittee counties. They did a little analysis of their own, and they came back and said, something's off here. The range is way too wide. The peak's a little bit too high. And that was really evident in counties where we could see that they were done at 7 o'clock. We knew they didn't have an issue with wait times. So we felt like they probably were adequately staffed, and yet they fell outside of the range. So I went back and looked a little bit closer and decided that was probably important to be mindful of the fact that when web score went down, we did have kind of a spike in the volume. And so I decided to take that low and high kind of outlier out of the data. And then we came up with a range that was a little bit more narrow and seemed to be a little bit closer to what people experienced. So you can look over here, and this is the handout, if you didn't get it, where you can see then this sort of recommended range and compare it to for 2016. And keep in mind, this recommended range is based on this 2018 anticipated turnout. And this is just, again, for illustrative purposes, just to show how maybe a tool like this could work. And so if you were to do something similar, and again, I think it really needs to be something that's collaborative with some strong statistic and math-minded individuals. Yeah, I'm looking at you. You could either suggest that every county meet that median. You could make a requirement that they just fall within a threshold. Or maybe you take the stance that they need to have that peak. They need to have enough check-in stations to meet that peak requirement, knowing that they may not be used but for those last few hours of voting. And then just to give us kind of some comparison and to see if we were even close with this sort of peak factor, peak multiplier, there is another tool, and it's available on the web. And then you can download it in an Excel format. And this is if you're not familiar, this is the Caltech MIT Voting Technology Project. And so they've put a couple of tools together, some line optimization tools and some tools to help you staff polling locations. The tools were really built for a precinct polling location model of voting. So I've done a little bit of tweaking to make it work for our purposes today. So where you see the word precinct, just kind of ignore that. So what I did is for each county went in and plugged in again the arrival rate. And this whole, just so you know, this tool is built on Little's Law, which is like some queuing analysis that helps you take a look at the number of people in line and the rate of arrival. And it's used to come up with wait times. But you can also use it, kind of reverse that calculation to make some analysis and to be able to see how many check-in stations. It says voting stations, but again, I'm basing this on that same formula before. That is a 5-minute check-in time. How many check-in stations would you need to keep this target wait time at 30 minutes or less? And this 95%, we kind of have you plug in this service level, and so it's saying so that we can keep the wait times to 30 minutes or less for at least 95% or more, or 95% of our customers. You can certainly tweak that. I just, again, for illustrative purposes, put it at 95. So you can see for Denver here, it's recommending to meet that peak capacity. And again, keep in mind, this was, you know, right about the time that they were dealing with this bump up from web score going down, would be 130 check-in stations. So if you go back to the other chart that I gave you, you'll see that it comes fairly close within that same range. And I only point that out because I think it gave me a little bit of confidence that both tools, there was some promise in both tools. Maybe, you know, something could be developed from one or the other. They weren't completely giving us opposite results. Yes.
Steve House, Republican Chair. Is this actual data?
Yes.
That's amazingly consistent hour by hour. Is there some limiting factor that keeps it somewhere between 1,300 and 1,600 on the arrival? Is that how many people get through the door in an hour?
That was how many people were recorded in scores having voted during that hour block of time.
Any reason why 3 o'clock in the afternoon in your mind was so much lower? Oh,
yes.
Okay, got it.
Yep. And so you'll see that as we go county by county, you'll see that same trend because it went down statewide. So I'll flip through each county's really quick just so we can kind of see where that is falling. And then, and I have to preface, this is really funny. So it is a third-party tool, and it was a little bit flaky, and it completely clunked out on Arapahoe County. Our volume was just like a little bit too high, and I'm not a programmer, so you'll see some blanks there. So you'll see El Paso recommended 99. And if you take a look, you'll see here, it's right here is the number of voting stations required to meet that service level of 30 minutes or less. So you can see for the most part, the number's almost half that. It's when we hit that peak, again, after web score went down, number that it's saying you would need 99 stations throughout the county to meet that arrival rate. Judd?
So I have a question. In the input, you're assuming no more than a maximum 30-minute wait. Does that mean that the average time in the output, so the average wait time, where you're at 7 minutes and 97, mm-hmm. whatever that is, so almost 8 minutes, does that mean that the average person in that was waiting 38 minutes or 8 minutes?
I think it's 8, but this is where the tool, I think, needs a little bit closer look because I tried to tweak it to push it to go up to that 30-minute time. And what it does, so let me show you Arapahoe's and then you'll see. See how it says unstable right here because I can't push these numbers up to where they need to be. And so however they've coded that, it's like it's keeping me from finding out what that unstable number is. Yeah. But I still think outside of Arapahoe County, and my guess is this is going to be this right here, just based on the other numbers, probably up in the 150s. Yeah. And just, again, for comparison, if you look back to the what I call the median peak formula, the recommendation for Arapahoe is, you know, 133 to 201. So, again, this tool falls within that range. So we can look at Adams, 99, Larimer, 111, Douglas. I know you guys are here, 84. And you had 80 stations, correct? So very close. Weld, 88, Pueblo, 20, and then we're going to start to kind of go down from here. Any questions about either of these tools or, you know, one of the things with this, let me just, before I take questions, one of the things with this particular tool is you could, if you were to develop something like this in-house, you could take it and instead of plugging in by hour, because we had talked about having this minimum required number of stations, but then allowing the clerk to distribute those where they thought they were needed. And that's really the tricky part, right? This is where, in my own county, we got into a little bit of an issue with wait times because we had two particular locations that were new. We didn't have good historic turnout from those locations, and so we didn't staff them as high as we needed to be. The resource was there. They were just at the wrong location. So you could use this tool, and instead of plugging in by hour, you could plug in each location, you know, and do some similar comparisons as to what the throughput or what the minimum requirement was for a particular location. I'm not sure that's something that you want to legislate or something that you want to be prescriptive in rule. You know, it might just be that's a tool that's available and it's a best practice, but I just wanted to let we've had this conversation about this and just show what we have looked at and take questions or suggestions or.
I have a quick question. If you go back to your original spreadsheet, you are making a prediction basically using 2016 data to extrapolate to 2018. I'm just curious. The same conditions don't really occur in 2018,
no.
So those aren't, you can't
no.
really extrapolate from one to the other, can you?
No, and so we kind of threw out a couple of different ideas. Like I said, you could maybe take like-for-like elections, so the last presidential, the last coordinated, the last gubernatorial, and apply that population increase. Or perhaps your anticipated maximum daily volume would be based on your current number of active registered voters, and you have to make a prediction then of that number, how many are going to show up in person on election day, and maybe you take that percentage from the last like election. So there are a number of different things you could do to get to that anticipated maximum daily volume. Like I said, I really just set this up more for illustrative purposes than to be 100% correct.
And we in Denver, we've got one for ballot processing purposes, and so by using like elections, we do that comparison to then project staff, you know, for each room. Similarly, for VSPCs, we did this now that we have the 2014 gubernatorial midterm. We can, you know, use that data because it is similar, though, where you see the kind of final day as the largest percentage, so you can apply that even though the numbers might be less. You can still apply the same concept to what this shows.
Did you guys look at how many machines are currently in those counties? Is that one of those things?
No. So this was not looking at voting machines. Is that what you're talking about?
Yeah.
This was just specific to check-in stations. So where the registration judge, you would register, change your address, and get your ballot or your voter activation card.
Were you able, from this data, to better understand if a county typically their voter would use a DRE as opposed to a county that would typically have their voter use a flat ballot where they were coming in to vote in person, and whether there was a speed element to using one or the other?
As far as the registration time, Judd, is that what
Yeah,
you're
so how long does it take for somebody to go through that process? Is it quicker to assign them to a DRE or to issue them a paper ballot?
You know what? I wasn't able to derive that at all. But there is another tool that we used, again, just to kind of test this. Let's see if I can get this up. So I plugged in the numbers for Fremont. This is a line optimization tool from MIT as well. And so you can put in the expected voters that day, the number of check-in stations, and here you could add the number of voting stations. And maybe, Judd, using something like this, you could derive that. When your polls are open, what your average check-in time, again, I use that 5 minutes. And then to run your simulation, you have some arrival patterns. And you can see from the data I showed you earlier that we have this pretty steady and then after work peak. And so that's what I plugged in. And the fun thing about this is, so you're seeing this yellow, if you can see where the mouse, my pointer is your check-in time. And so, you know, for Fremont, for what the... And this check-in stations is what this MIT tool projected they should have had for this election. You can see their time's pretty low. You can run different simulations so that it's kind of recalculating just to see, you know, throw different patterns in there of arrival. But you can see, like, if we decrease their number of voting stations... Now, the pink is the time to wait to vote. So you still have this under 15-minute time to check in, but then the time to wait to vote jumps up to about 30 minutes. So it is kind of a fun tool to use, and we've tried to use this in, you know, making determinations, at least for this last election, on resource allocation. It's not perfect. Again, it is not an exact science, but it helps you do a little bit more than make a best guess.
We presented these tools and this toolkit at our Clerks Association conference maybe 2 years ago in Mesa County. So this is a tool that counties have had available for some time, and it's been really helpful, particularly in the more population-dense counties, to start looking at these for sort of projections. And with the more historical data you have, the easier it is and the more data you can capture. So I think you could see it's kind of cool. It's cool to play with and see where your breaking point is. And also, I think, Judd, to your point, the you know, the type of ballot or method of voting, what your system, you know, is and how you produce a ballot, as well as how quickly people move through the different types of ballots, makes a difference as well.
Martha Tierney, do we know which counties used these tools in prepping for 2016?
So that actually gets to my next question, which was, do you foresee a future where the state obligates larger counties to produce a report like this, which might be included in the mail ballot plan or some other plan?
And that's kind of what we were going with, and that was kind of the vision. If we were to do something like this, it would need to be simple enough that it came pre-loaded, like you do with the mail ballot plan, with whatever. Go back. Whatever this anticipated maximum daily volume is going to be, it needs to be standardized, I think, across counties. The transaction time, I could see that one being contested a little bit about having a statewide standard. But I think that would make the most sense, right, that was plugged in. And then you provide that tool then has a recommended range or minimum threshold that then the county would show that they've met that.
Just a response to your question, as I think about it, you know, how many people are using this specific tool? I would be most familiar with the planning around the Tier 1 counties. I can't say how many are doing this, but I do know that the vast majority, if not all, have some kind of projection tool that they've either built in-house, or maybe it's something like this or derived from this. But I do know that most of the Tier 1 counties, if not all, are using something.
And again, some of the assumptions with the toolkits are also precinct-based, and so they may need some modification for vote center as well, which I think is an important point. So you look at them, you see what it sort of shows, what you have. We have choice between paper and electronic. That also is not something that's necessarily factored into the existing toolkit. So again, to Jennifer's point, you know, modifying it to you know, match more closely the Colorado model makes a lot of sense.
So MIT is opening up their they have a grand opening of their election
data
institute, graphs. Yeah, whatever it is that Charles Stewart is leading. And I'll be there, and I know a number of people in the elections community will be there for it. It's like next month. They have a tool like this, but it may actually be stolen from or borrowed extensively from the Caltech school tool. So I wonder if we might want to reach out to Charles or maybe to the Caltech people and ask them, can you create a vote center model?
So funny that you say that, because I actually had a chance to have dinner with him last week. And I asked him if he had some magic eight ball, some modeling tool that we could use. And he said they don't, but I think it's something that they're working towards. And so this would be a really, regardless of what happens with the VSPC reduction piece and what we decide to do with this, I think this would be a great opportunity for Colorado to really collaborate on that with them to provide something like this for states with similar voting model.
Well, and remember, the Vote Center is an early voting model. So there would be application for those states that are seeing their early voting going like this, you know, versus where we're at more shifting towards mail in our model. But there would be broad application, I think, for that project.
Well, and the denominator in this model, the one that they currently use, the tool that we're currently using, is the number of people in the precinct or the number of eligible voters. So it seems like that's an easily translatable number of people in the county as the denominator, and then divided by the number of vote centers. So it shouldn't actually be all that complicated to revise it. The catchy part is there are certain locations in a county, you know, like what's your point place? Center point. That's right. It escaped my mind. I blocked it. Center point in, like you guys get a lot of business at Center Point in Arapahoe County, that the calculus would probably evenly distribute them across your vote centers. And there you would have to be smart about the way you allocated your resources, but it would still give you insight into what your capacity would be given your number of check-ins.
Yeah, and I've shared with Charles some of the things we've done with early voting as well as vote centers, and he totally, I think, wants to build a vote center tool. But I think with the vote centers, though, there's even sort of more complication rather than sort of just this high level, because the other thing is, and this varies by county, and it also varies by site, is the number of changes of address or new registrations or just straight voting. And, like, with us, we went by site and projected, based on 2014, how many new registrations or changes we expected. So I think you also have to dig into that, because the transaction time gets greatly increased. And so, and like, with counties that aren't as mobile as others, I mean, I know the metro area, like at Denver in particular, we have high mobility rates in certain parts of the city, more so than others. And so, like, we have to go in and I think sort of account for that in some way. So there's even more detail behind the scenes that is meaningful for, like, the center point discussion and some of those things. And then, you know, for us, I mean, we have other complications, including, you know, the extra time if somebody does need translation services or translation assistance, that registration time and check-in takes longer. And we just, you know, we kind of know where some of those things are. But for projection purposes, like, those things have to be considered as well. And so I think these things are going to vary by county, and the counties understand what those complexities are, and so might, you know, vary their tool depending on what their specific needs are. In the machine versus paper thing, I think it does take longer if you're using a ballot on demand printer to produce a ballot than it does. Well, in theory it should take longer, but the check-in part where we issue the card to swipe the tablet would be super helpful if it was at the check-in station, which is a score development issue. But Dwight isn't listening. He's going to ignore me. But anyways, we had about 65% of our voters want to use the tablet. And so if they could do that seamlessly and quickly there, it would speed up the check-in process. So that's all I would say on that.
No, and I was just going to add, we're looking at that data because that is critical. It's a critical piece. I just threw up one of the elements where we've tried to look at new registrations and change of addresses and how that voter voted, whether it was by mail or in person. And you can see just like with voting at the very end there, that percentage shoots up for in-person voting. But it isn't just as easy as putting a spreadsheet together. There is a lot of complexity to it. And so I guess that's kind of the question, and I'm assuming the reason for this presentation is to decide, is this something that we want to do in conjunction with this VSPC reduction, or is this a best practices process that we work on as a state and come back to it?
This is Dan Pabon. So I think this is independent of the VSPC conversation, because I think regardless of where we end up on that issue, I think we've got to have some data and some analytical tools and some metrics to tell us how we deal with line issues and queuing setups, again, regardless of how many VSPCs there are. I mean, really, you're just talking about one denominator in the formula, and this is a valuable tool. I mean, I echo Martha's question about how many folks use this tool, because it seems like maybe there's less than we should need, and this might be a valuable investment of resources for all of us, and it may be it is an issue of statewide concern. So I at least speaking for myself, I think it's a very valuable investment of time, energy, and potentially resources to really figure out how we can make this more systematic amongst all 64 counties.
Well, it's certainly something we can write a rule for. Nothing's ever stopped us from writing a rule except for the district court.
Well, so. I also want to reiterate again, I think it's absolutely the goal, but remember these tools have not been adapted for Vote Center. So the resource investment needs to be there first before we, you know, look at broad utilization. And of course, and see how far down the population base it's applicable as well too. That's one of the validity tests that need to be done because there may be some validity issues around that as well.
Well, and another issue which this really can't protect you against is what happened in El Paso County when they get twice as many people registering to vote than basically every other county in the state. And so when you have something like that, you're just going to have a bigger drag on your resources. You're going to have slower lines. You're going to have, you know, more people standing there at 10 o'clock at night on a big election. So it's just one of those things that happens when you can't really predict that that's going to happen.
No, I think those are all great points. I think, I think counties generally do a good job in projecting with whatever they have in-house. I think the advantage to something like this and having something, whether it's in rule, I don't think something like this needs to be in statute, but it would allow a lot more transparency into our process so that anybody could go and see, okay, well, how did you get to the numbers you got to? I think that's where the real advantage is. If we can narrow down, get to the Vote Center calculation so we have that right, I think it would be really good for the transparency of our elections and so people can really see how we come to the conclusions we come to so that people don't think we just show up on election day and throw out some equipment and we're done. I think that would be a really valuable piece to this.
I've got to agree it's a valuable tool. I hate to see anything like this get into rule or statute. I think there are issues that go beyond your number of check-in stations you have, your process flows. Our process flow is drastically different from El Paso, and we had drastically different results. And what you do in prepping the person before they ever get to that check-in station, is a process issue. And as Amber's pointed out, they have different issues with translation pieces. And so, yes, I see it as a valuable tool as you're planning your election, but I hate to try and quantify anything like this in the rule or statute. You know your county, and you know, and unless we're going to, I mean, we'd be glad to give lessons in best practices, but I think everybody has got their own situation that they know the nuances. You know center point. We all have our nuances, and so I think we've got to be careful what we try and put into concrete.
So this sounds similar to the debates we have, at least in the couple buildings across the street, about testing, education, having 176 different school districts. Everyone knows their own particular set of students and how they should best teach them the curriculum. But then we also have some statewide standards in place by which we can measure each of those counties or school districts' outcomes. And to me, this seems like that it may not be this particular spreadsheet and this particular software and this particular vendor. Don't get me wrong, I'm not saying let's go buy this and implement it. What I'm saying is something of this sort that allows us to have some statewide standards that we can all look at and then come back to say, okay, you had a couple deviations from the average. What happened? And we can just ask the questions. And really, it's not a judgment tool. It's an opportunity, frankly, as Matt just said, that to look inside and say, okay, how can we do better? Because I think at the end of the day, we're looking for a best practice. And if Arapahoe and Denver and others are leading the way and they can show us objectively that that's happening, we should find out more. What's going on?
Just before I send it down, one thing I think would be very helpful if we did go along this road is to have some kind of waiver process involved as well. So, you know, we have the numbers, but if you have a county that consistently demonstrates that they push people through and there's no problem and whatever model they use to arrive at that, then I think it would be great as a part of the mail ballot plan if we decide to go down the road of putting it in rule to where counties would have the ability to say, hey, look, we do a great job. You know, our numbers vary a little bit from this, and then present that information before the plan's approved. I think that would be entirely appropriate, too.
I may have missed this before in another meeting, so I apologize, but why 30 minutes? At 31 minutes, do people start sending in complaints? Did we get complaints this year? Starts after 1 minute.
There was a Presidential Commission on Election Administration that was put together several years ago, and that was their collective recommendation that no voter have to wait more than 30 minutes.
So that was a national? Did we track complaints other than Arapahoe County being unstable, Matt? Did we track complaints this year and see, was there any specifics about people saying, you know, I waited 45 minutes? I mean, because even though there was a recommendation by the commission, the reality of this is Colorado. What do people tolerate here?
I don't really know how to answer that because I think on election day at 6 p.m. or 7 p.m., they tolerate whatever they need to get their vote cast. But, you know, 30 minutes is kind of the target that we're aiming for. Certainly, we'd like to see it less. And if you look, we really, you know, we tracked wait times in Arapahoe nearly live. It wasn't quite perfect, but we did a pretty good job this year. And they stayed pretty low, but then we did have a big spike up. At one point, we had people waiting close to an hour, and they waited. So
we have one data point that we do have is that the MIT Institute that I was telling you about, Charles Stewart, does a survey after each major election, and he interviews 1,000 people in each state. And from that, he can determine whether or not there were consistent wait times. The wait time for Colorado in this last election, I believe the average wait time was like 15 minutes or 14 minutes, something like that, which was high for us. That was the highest one that I can remember on record for us. But that's statewide, and many, many of those people voted by mail, so they had zero wait time. So there were some people that were telling us about a long wait time. But our wait time average put us in the top third nationally, but not in the top 10 or the, even within the top 10 of states as we were in the previous election. So we did see some fall off based, I think, on the fact that we had a lot of people on Election Day.
But I think, Jed, those are self-reported, aren't they?
Those are self-reported times. So it's in a survey. That's right.
Yeah, Jed, and on top of that survey data, the EAC and Pew collects survey data. And again, survey data is self-reported, so it's not as fine of a measurement as we could get maybe out of score reports like we're getting now. They also do voter satisfaction with survey data, too, and very, very high in Colorado in the past. So I think there's multiple places we can get it. I think what we're really talking about, too, is targeting our resources to those exceptional items, right? And this is one tool in the toolbox in order to identify where those exceptional places are that we may need addressing.
I just think one of the questions that I keep going over in my mind is, if we want people to vote by mail, if we keep making it more efficient to vote in person, will we not be pushing away from them voting by mail? Now, I don't want to manipulate the process. I just want to say, when I go to the DMV, there are times I wait a lot more than 30 minutes. And I do it anyway. I do it anyway because I have to do it. But the reality of it is, if we're trying to get more mail-in ballots to be mailed in, you know, where's the line we draw between spending more money on this? Because I want people to be able to vote versus, you know, people look at it and go, wow, I waited 35 minutes last time. I think I'm going to mail it in this time.
Martha Tierney, I think the issue is that the people that are showing up in person need help. So they, 90-some percent of them, and I'm throwing that number out of my of a hat, but most people who have a mail ballot aren't going to a VSPC. There are some people who like to vote in person, but most people need help. They didn't get a mail ballot. They lost it. The dog ate it. They need to register. So we have to have those in-person options for that portion of the population that needs to go to a VSPC.
So they're just procrastinating to the very last day to do that?
And if you look at this data point up here, the last line, let me zoom in a little bit more, is really important. So this on the left, 12,000 people that voted in person on Election Day had a change of address. Over here, 32,000 that were registering for the first time. So they had a different and unique need.
So what does that work out percentage-wise?
17%. And 13%.
Jed, can I just add something to the who needs help in the in-person voting? The people with disabilities that need an accessible machine, and long lines are definitely a problem for many people with physical disabilities or mental health disabilities. So I do think it's important to make sure these VSPCs are, you know, running smoothly and accessible to people with disabilities.
I completely agree. As long as it's in the statute, I think we have an obligation to provide, you know, the best customer service we can. And that's not to say we can't build our communication campaigns around returning your mail ballot, preferably by Dropbox. We really like that. But I think as long as it's in the statute, we have an obligation to do the best job we can.
So this has been a great presentation. Are there any other questions or comments that anybody wants to make? How about this side of the room? Very quiet on this side of the room.
Okay.
I knew I could get something out of her if I.
I think this is Elena Nunez. I can give you all sorts of thoughts. I think it's really helpful and. Two things. One, Senator Fenberg did have a bill that would have created a structure for measuring wait time, so I think that's something this commission should consider. It unfortunately didn't move forward, but if we want a more systematic approach to gathering data, we should certainly encourage that. I do think, considering that we saw significant lines in many counties, and I think beyond just the SCORE outage, we need to figure out how to make these tools work, because I don't think leaving it purely to county discretion works. So I'd be interested in figuring out whether it's using the MIT tool or some of the work that Jennifer and Amber and their staffs are using. I think there's a lot of room to make these tools more effective. So I appreciate the presentation and would love to figure out how we can make them fit the Colorado model, because I don't think it's adequate to say maybe they don't, so they don't work. So I'm interested to see where this goes.
Sherry's back that way, if you, and then Matt.
One thing that I'd like to do, and I know we've had conversations about this, but when we talk about lines, really take a look at that and see if there's a kind of a demarcation point in terms of size of county where it impacts, and be very careful about putting any additional burden on counties below that where the issues may not entirely be the same. So I think we need to be very strategic in how we approach that as well.
Sherry Davis, Douglas County. We did not experience lines in this election. And one of the things that I would like everyone to consider, it's not just the number of check-in stations that you have, it's not just the number of voting booths you have, but the process around that. Because we had a process by which we had a greeter who supplied the voter with the necessary forms to fill out before they ever got to the check-in judge. Some of the lines were created because people were standing at the check-in judge filling out their forms, which then created the line. And then once you get a line, it's hard to get that pushed through. So it's the process. It's the entire process we need to look at, not just specifically the number of check-in stations and specifically the number of voting stations. It's the entire flow of that voter service and polling center.
All right. Thank you, Jennifer, very much. Very interesting data, and thanks for the presentation. We appreciate it. If there's any additional help that we can provide at the Secretary of State's office or elsewhere, we're happy to provide it.
One more question. Is all of this data available somewhere, like all this these documents?
We can make it available.
That would be really, really great.
Okay.
Yeah, it's something that we showed today. We'll have to put it on our website under our committee.
So this check-in station spreadsheet, I think, is on your website.
Okay.
Right then. And the this one is as well. Again, keep in mind, this is less formal. So I get a little nervous to put it out there because that's not my background necessarily. It was just a good first stab at a product. So. And we can make this bigger workbook available too. Okay.
Great. Thank you. So I'm going to turn it over to Ben Schlaer. He is going to give us a rundown on some of the legislation that's happening just a block or so away, where some of you probably are very familiar with it, but others may not. So Ben, why don't you tell us about it?
Good afternoon. Before I start talking about legislation, just a quick update for you all. During one of our initial meetings, we talked about the fact that the Secretary of State's office is moving forward with implementation of Propositions 107 and 108. Those are the presidential primary and the regular state primary that allow unaffiliateds to participate, and that we're doing that through the rulemaking process. And we also mentioned that we'd be establishing a county working group in order to determine how best to craft those rules in order to make sure that we are accommodating counties of all different sizes, technological abilities and those types of things. The county working group that we've put together includes a pretty good cross-section of counties. It includes Arapahoe, Denver, Mesa, Jefferson, La Plata, Logan, Boulder, Washington, Broomfield, Garfield, El Paso, Chaffee, Weld, and Douglas counties. We haven't actually had a meeting of the working group yet because we're trying to establish, I guess, a bit of a baseline understanding of where each county's at with how they might implement the more difficult components of 107 and 108. And when I say most difficult, there's really one, and that's the idea that unaffiliateds are now able to participate in the primary election. And it's been Secretary Williams' contention from the beginning that while we certainly need to follow the will of the voters who passed 107 and 108 and allow unaffiliateds to participate in the party's primaries. It also continues to be the party's right to be able to know who is participating in their primary election. And for that reason, that means that there needs to be a process for an unaffiliated voter to not affiliate with the party, but to at least indicate whether or not that voter voted the Republican Party ballot or the Democratic Party ballot. And so the great many of you who are familiar with the processes of elections know that that's not an easy task for counties to accommodate, because we also are required to and find it very important to maintain the anonymity of a voter's ballot, which means that we are kind of brainstorming how are we going to make this happen. And so what we've done is we've asked that group of counties that I just mentioned to fill out a questionnaire that we sent out that contains several questions to kind of get the conversation going, and also to give the Secretary of State's office, which does not run elections, a better understanding of the difficulties that the counties are going to face, and to get good ideas from the folks who are best equipped to give us those ideas. We've asked those counties to get back to us by March 1st with that information. I've already had quite a few discussions with many of the elections directors or clerks in those counties, and we know that they're working hard on it amongst all the other things that they have to do. And so as soon as we get that information back and we're able to compile it and get an understanding of where we are, our next step will be to convene that group, and you know, everybody can throw a whole bunch of stuff at me, or hopefully we can come to some consensus on a few things. So that's the working group. As far as legislation goes, I have a list here that is not a comprehensive list of all of the legislation that Secretary Williams supports or is working toward, but this is a list of the stuff that's kind of moving forward at this point. The first one being the ballot access and vacancy bill. That's actually not something that you can access just yet. It has not been introduced, although we do expect that it will be introduced in the early part of March, and that's to, you know, create some technical cleanup around the vacancy process, so the party vacancy process, and some other petitioning process stuff in order to make it easier for the Secretary of State's office to work with the parties, make it easier for counties to work on petitions, and make sure that everybody's expectations are set early on in the process when vacancies arise. The Watcher Bill, the Senate State Affairs Committee held a hearing on that bill earlier this week, heard testimony, but there was no action on that bill yet. So I think that's scheduled for an actual vote here fairly soon. So that's the bill that is very similar to the bill that we put forward last year, and it's essentially the items that the Secretary's Election Watcher Advisory Panel came to agreement on back in 2014. So we're hopeful that bill keeps moving forward. Senate Bill 71 is Senator Tate's bill regarding changing the formula for voter service and polling centers. That's the best bill by far. I think that one's got 100% consensus and might have already been signed by the governor. Or maybe that's a different bill. So that bill was also heard this week in Senate State Affairs, and the committee heard testimony on it, but hasn't taken any action on it. But we also expect that to happen sometime soon. The next one is petition signature verification, and that is concerning candidate signature verification. As you know, right now, when the Secretary of State or when counties are reviewing petitions for candidates to get on the ballot, they are not actually, except for Denver, because Amber's looking at me, aside from the city and county of Denver, when a county is reviewing or the Secretary of State is reviewing that petition, they don't actually review the signature against the signature that's in the voter's record. We think it's about time that became something that we do. So this bill would require us to do that. And for those of us who administer that process, we've always had a lot of heartburn about that, not because we think it's a good idea, but because it's extremely time consuming. And just like everything in the election process, you know, the next process comes up quickly and there isn't a lot of time. We're fortunate that there are some great technological solutions out there that we've been looking at right now. Denver has crafted a technological solution, and there are some other ones out there. And so we're confident that at this point we should be able to do that and do that efficiently. So we certainly support that bill. The next is Amendment 71 implementation. That bill has passed through Senate State Affairs and is moving on to the Appropriations Committee. That bill implements the requirement that signature gatherers for constitutional amendments, signature gatherers for proposed constitutional amendments, get at least 2% of the signatures required from each of the 35 different Senate districts. And it's a pretty simple fix. I tried to get all mathematical about it and realized that I wasn't very good at that, and so we're going for a pretty simple fix, which is just the fact that we're going to have to do a line-by-line review of all the signatures if one of those meets a very simple 90% threshold, projecting that they'll have at least 90% of the signatures required. The Senate Bill 170 that's the supplemental appropriation that our office requested because we did not accurately predict the number of active registered electors that there would be after the 2016 general election, which is the number used to calculate the amount of money that we reimburse counties for after a general election or after an election where there's an issue on the ballot. Usually you don't feel great when you were not able to accurately predict something that then causes a cost increase, but I think that this is a good one. The fact that there was a significant increase in voter registration across the board, makes that a pretty good failure on our end. And the final one is ballot selfies. That passed through Senate State Affairs, and hopefully we won't have to think about that one for much longer. That is all that I have, unless anyone has any specific questions about any of these bills.
We have legislators in the room. Would they like to comment on what they've heard? Ben's summary and extraneous comments no? Everybody's comfortable? No comment? All right. So that was all that we were hoping to accomplish today, but it's an open forum now. If you have any topics you'd like to bring up or comment on, legislation or otherwise.
What is the expectation of this group to do with all this information?
I thought our brains would grow. I think that the secretary envisioned that the previous couple of sessions of BIAC would lead to a meeting. We were hypothetically thinking it might be today, where we could throw out a number of alternatives, kind of get everybody on record on some various things and see if that could lead to legislation. That didn't actually happen today. But I do understand that there are conversations happening amongst various interested parties, and maybe the goodwill necessary to get the right pieces put together will perhaps happen behind closed doors and can appear as legislation after that. That's kind of where I think we're at.
I mean, we've concentrated on VSPC formulas, but you presented at the first meeting, I think, like 5-6 different legislative initiatives.
Yeah, that is true. And a couple of those we have either taken under our wing as a policy change, a potential rule change, a rule plus a policy change, and then a couple of them are legislative, one of which is the VSPC, but then others, like 71, is a consequence of legislation as well, just the implementation legislation. Ben, you may have more on that.
Well, the only thing I would say to that is that particularly with the implementation of Propositions 107 and 108, while we do want to get good information from the counties to understand where we're going with that, I do think that that is another topic that would be ripe for this type of body in order to understand, you know, where the Secretary of State's office lands, where we're coming from, where we may be way off base, and to help, you know, to help kind of guide that a little bit. So I think that that would be certainly be a topic for future discussion. I know that the Voter Service and Polling Center issue has kind of taken up quite a bit of the commission's time, and the charge of the commission under the rule is to kind of meet quarterly, and obviously we're in the legislative session, so we're doing that more often. But I do think that that 107, 108 is certainly a good topic to tee up moving forward, and we appreciate everybody's, you know, time to continue to come down here and look at the significant amount of data and everything that's being presented. But we recognize that it's not the only forum for, you know, determining what's going to end up in a bill. And so that's why we haven't really taken any votes at this point. But I think that there are other topics that are good for this this committee to look at.
Which is a wonderful segue to, we should probably try to schedule our next meeting. Since it looks like we sort of run the VSPC thread to its natural conclusion, I'm guessing that the urgency of having a meeting in the next couple of weeks has diminished. So I'm thinking, since we've had a whole bunch in a row here, we might be thinking about a May meeting. Does that sound, Ben, you may have talked to the Secretary more recently than I.
Yeah, only to the extent that I might propose that while we, you know, agree that 1:30 on Friday seems to be a reasonably good time for everybody, that perhaps we don't necessarily try to set a meeting date for today, but try to circle back with the group and get that onto the schedule as soon as we think that we've got a good amount of information to provide to the commission to make sure that it's a worthwhile meeting.
And I think that's a very winning proposal. So why don't we not worry about scheduling the next meeting, and we will meet with the Secretary, which I haven't spoken to him about his plans for the future concerning this commission, and I'll meet with him, and then we'll get back to you, and we'll try to schedule something. Does that all sound good? Any closing comments? Great. Thank you. Appreciate it.